Homestyle Green, episode 229. How can you be significant wherever you are? G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh, the host of the show, and this week I'm bringing you a conversation I had with Simon Croker. Now, Simon has a practice in the small town of Goulburn, which sits somewhere in between Canberra and Sydney in New South Wales, Australia. With a population of only around 24,000 people, it may not seem huge or in particularly significant, but Simon shows that you can have significance as a designer, builder, whatever you do in the building industry, wherever you are. And we need people in all places, whether you're in a big fancy firm in the middle of a massive city, or if you're in a little country town, because people need houses that are healthy, comfortable, and we need to make best use of the resources and particularly the energy and things like water. And that's exactly what Simon is doing, having discovered Passive House recently and set up his own practice. So I started out by asking Simon a little bit about Goulburn.
Yeah, Goulburn, New South Wales, little country town, was the first actually inland city between Sydney and Canberra in New South Wales. So, yeah, still got a country town at heart, some great farmers, businessmen and the like in the area. So it's a lovely place to grow up and visit, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's home for you? You grew up there and it's been life there?
Yes, it is, Matthew. I was in Canberra for 9 years when I did some study and worked up there, and then came back in 2004 and started up my business, SC Design Solutions. Yeah, so been back since 2004. Yeah, so,
And for those might be familiar with Canberra, but I imagine your climate would be quite similar to that because you're inland. So do you get quite extremes, highs in summer and quite low temperatures in winter?
Yeah, absolutely. It's got a 50, I think it's diurnal temperature range. So you're looking sort of minus eights to, 42, 40, 41, 42, even a couple of years ago. So it is quite extreme and it's quite a challenge because you've got, 10 months of the year where it's a warming time, and then you've got the heat as a cooling time from sort of, mid-December, sometimes right through to the end of February, so even early March. So it's quite a challenge to look at that as from a holistic point of view at the start, and then how that turns into good design and how we can use the site. And I think that's where the site itself is really important for the groundwork of that.
What's the population there, do you know?
I think it's nearly around 28,000 now. So it's been growing. I mean, I guess in the early years it was around, sort of stood around at 22, I think, 23,000. Mm-hmm. But I think in the last sort of 5 or 6 years it's gone up, seems to feel slightly busier, and we've got a little bit more industry in the town.
So still a bit of building work going on?
Yeah, look, it's been good, actually. Thanks, Matthew. It's consistent. It seems to, the town seems to always something happening. It never probably rivals, Canberra in a sense of spikes and great sort of lunges in the market, but it always seems to be consistent, I've found anyway. There's always work around. Builders seem to be, have consistent work. Doesn't seem to be too many lulls. So it's one of those sort of real, diverse little towns that just keeps grinding away, sort of a hardworking town.
How did you get into architecture in the first place?
I guess it started back really my whole life. My father was a builder. He's a retired builder now, but for 40 years, And I was on job sites, I guess, since I was probably five or six. And I remember just admiring how these buildings just emerged out of the ground. And you had, you know, the slab would be poured and then would come back to dad's site and it just emerge. And I think just watching that as a young child, it just looked big to me and it looked amazing how it all interconnected. And I think that's sort of where it started. And then I guess, so building, construction, and then sort of computers and design and drawing sort of all seemed to merge together through high school. And then did building design course to see if I really liked it. And then I loved that, finished that, and then sort of moved into university for a while and did 4 years there. And I got a job with Bunning and Madden Architects, which were in Canberra at the time, and gave me a great opportunity to really sink my teeth into some sort of commercial-based projects, which threw me in the deep end, so to speak. But it was great because you didn't know anything and you just, it was the old style, you know, start at the bottom, work your way through, use your initiative, you know, go with your gut feeling. And I guess my old boss, he was great, the late Graham, he used to say, if you, whatever you draw, make sure you know what you're drawing. And if you come back with nothing, blank page, that's okay too, because whatever you draw, whatever line, you must know what it's for. So that's kind of stood with me till this day, actually. So, it's really all I know. And then the sustainable design probably came a little later. I worked with Dr. Chris Reardon. He was a sort of a sustainability advocate back in the 90s, did some work experience with him. And then later when I came back to Goulburn, did some work, full-time work with him. And he was just fantastic with looking at sustainability. He was looking at rammed earth and earth-shielded homes back then, and everyone was looking at him like he was from another planet in the late 90s. So, but, you know, I think I learned a lot from him and that connection with the environment and how energy used. I think that was the key for me. What's energy? How is that used? How is that wasted? How is that contained? How's it stored? So all those sort of things were in my mind, I guess, back then, sort of early 2000s, and shaped me to where I am. Today.
And how do those ideas translate to your practical work now? What sorts of things do you do differently to incorporate some of those thoughts about energy efficiency, for example?
Matthew, we try to, I guess, it's a holistic design approach. So it's not just a building sitting on a site. It's got its environment, it's got its opportunities, it's got its constraints, it may have views, it may have vistas, and we're looking at obviously the functionality and the performance of the building as well. So it's a holistic approach, I guess, and I spend a lot of time sort of on the sites, and we do a lot of rural residential, I must admit, which can be off-grid, and so the environment could be quite big, but also in an urban setting, there's still opportunities and constraints. So I believe really spending that time initially with the client on the site, just discussing, you know, outcomes, solutions, expectations, et cetera, and just trying to, and then moving that through, and obviously that your sustainability, passive house principles, you know, your healthy house, good air quality, you know, positive impacts, balance, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess holistic is probably the word for me, because there's even landscaping probably gets often overlooked. I think that's an integral part of the design process and a finish to the site or to the project. Because
looking through your portfolio and I guess by virtue of where you are geographically in Australia, there's a lot of open space out there, and yeah, you've got the urban centre, the little town, but it looks like there's a lot of kind of country settings, big skies, and there's a lot of landscape to be part of.
That's right. Yeah, there is, and some of the blocks are quite large, and it's about how they integrate without, you know, obviously too much clearing or just nestling the building in the site or finding a pocket that just seems to fit with the wind direction or the views or the solar gain. So it is a challenge because, you know, sometimes you have too much space and too many infinite possibilities, but you have to narrow it down. You have to justify the location and that's the fun challenge we have every day. But I guess that helps shape how the building may look, what materials may be used, and how there's that synergy and harmony with the landscape, I think, and probably being in a rural setting, that's right, has probably had a strong connection to me over the years.
You mentioned some influential figures there that sort of guided you towards sustainability. Was anything like that addressed in your training when you went to university and studied as an architect? Was there much covered on sustainability there?
Yes, there was. I guess it wasn't a focal point. I guess I think I had to specialise or find that on my own. With Chris and just the general, I think my environment in the country town, maybe it kind of merged into one. But yeah, I think looking at saving energy is just a no-brainer. I mean, looking at a healthy house is a win-win for everyone. So those kind of easy questions back to myself, you know, years ago, obviously, now it just all made sense. So I guess, just looking at that, it just made that sort of my primary focus. And I think, started off as solar passive design, and then I found Passive House, which only a few years ago now, and it's just blew me away, and got certified as a designer, Passive House designer. And then, you know, it's just opened up more questions and how to translate those answers for clients. And that, I guess, the validity of calculations and things like that. So the solar passive had always had, the passive measures, but at least the scientific measures and validity of Passive House have really made sense to me.
So you like that mathematical verification of the concept. So you understood the general concepts, but it's kind of nice to have the backup of the science.
Yeah, I think so, Matthew. I think that's right. I believe that it's only improving the house, and it's obviously that energy component of that, or that low energy usage component, when we're our legacy of when the clients or the owners have moved in, and it's that how much energy use is that building going to use, really that saving there is to them, and the materials and the long life of the materials, just to give an example, you know, those sorts of things. It's also part of the legacy, not just the design in the short time frame that we're in the project. So yeah, that sort of really strikes me, and how that can change, you know, change as our environment is changing. So yeah.
Have you had much opportunity to do a full passive house project?
I'm currently designed two at the moment. So we've sort of started at the end of last year.
Yeah.
So we're currently sort of in the final certification stage, and hopefully by the end of this year, we've had a few delays obviously in the current environment, but hopefully by the end of the year we'll start our first one that's between Goulburn and Canberra on a larger lot, and then the other ones in an urban setting, yeah.
How did those come about?
It was funny because it was good because we touched on this earlier in our conversation. The people knew about it, wanted to make a difference. They were already, I guess, in some cases, self-educated a little bit, obviously enough to know how it worked and what it could achieve. So it was an easy sell for me, obviously, as a designer wanting to do a few of these. So they've been really excited, and they're lovely people. Yeah, so I guess that's a good start for me to have clients sort of on the front foot asking quite technical questions from the start. Yeah.
Right.
So it has been.
So it's driven by clients coming to you saying, I want one of these, I want a passive house, rather than you having to convince existing clients of going down that path.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So I think that's probably a good sign of change, positive change in the community or in the you know, macro environment, that people are starting to want to do these type of homes. And I think that's fantastic to see.
Have you had any resistance, even in your own mind, when you first came across those concepts, or when you're talking about passive house to other people? Is there any concern there, any barriers to overcome?
Yeah, I guess there is. The ultimate calculations and all the work behind the scenes to get the end result gives concern to the client, because they think, oh, wow, we've got to do all this, we've got to do all that. But I think obviously that's our job and our exciting part that we enjoy. But I think that part of it, and as more passive houses are emerging in Australia, I think that intangible asset, that it's hard to show clients how the building will feel or how healthy is that building as opposed to a normal building. Why couldn't I save a little bit more money and have a minimum 5-star, 6-star house, and, you know, I've still got a house, still got a roof. How is this going to really change my life or change our living? So that's probably the core of it for me, of explaining that. But I guess as more houses emerge and as we get a few, you know, out of the ground, then they'll be able to visit that. And I think that and I believe that the monitoring is important, you know, the CO2 levels, oxygen levels, and showing clients that, you know, what a passive house can do and what a non-passive house, say, doesn't do, or if someone doesn't open windows, or appropriate cross-flow ventilation is implemented in a house over winter, say, for instance, how the indoor air quality can change. So I think that intangible is probably the hardest thing. The intangible assets, thermal comfort in a house, has been probably always for me a hard thing to explain, because you really need to experience it, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. And I've expressed this to others, and we talked about the fact that it's hard to take photos of, and you're looking through your portfolio, the landscape again plays a big part in those pictures, and big sliding doors and beautiful kitchens, but it's hard to take a photo of comfort and health.
Yeah, that's right. And it's probably the lost best asset to the house, you know.
Yeah.
We talked about condensation and mold and CO2. All those things are balanced. Yeah, that's right. It's probably a lot of the time definitely overlooked, and how we can, I guess now we can measure that. I think that makes it, you know, a really exciting sort of prospect moving forward.
I got to ask you about windows, because again, looking at some of the work that you've done, the views are a big feature, and some of your windows are quite big. How do you reconcile that with the requirements of passive house or energy efficient buildings when you're in a climate like we discussed, can get quite cold, but it can also get pretty intense in the summer as well?
That's right. Yeah. Look, shading's the key. And there's always that sort of heat wave where, you know, it's just really tough and it puts the pressure on the whole house. But generally throughout the year, you know, 11 months, 12 months to the 12-month mark, shading's the key. Landscaping can be a really big key. And obviously, you know, the tempered glass or the low E or the coatings on the glass come into play as well a lot over the years on different orientation sectors. So it's all those combination of all those things, I think, mm-hmm. need to be addressed. And we often, like obviously in the cold climate, you're sort of more orientating to let more light in to heat the house generally, not so much in passive house obviously, but to warm the house, let the sunlight in. So that synergy needs to be kind of quite strong, I believe, you know, and gets to that almost. We've been looking into sort of biophilic design, so that sort of nature, harmony, you know, light and how that affects people, you know. You imagine, as you know, in a box, dark room, limited light, outside thermal comfort range, your emotion connection changes, and your thermal levels and your mind changes. So I think that's another kind of intangible asset that could be explored and as well. And then, yeah, windows play a big role in that.
Yeah. And in terms of other materials, do you play around? Do you like playing around with lots of different materials? You don't seem to be wedded to one particular. You know, you've worked with concrete, timber. I see quite a lot of corrugated iron, which is a bit of a throwback for Australian heritage buildings.
Yeah, that's right, Matthew. Yeah, a bit of an Australian vernacular there. I guess that's the old corrugated iron shed.
But with a modern twist, you know, you're playing around with you know, horizontally aligned corrugations and in slightly different forms of how you'd expect to use that material in a traditional way.
Yeah, look, we've tried to look at sort of locally sourced materials. I guess that's sort of our starting point. If we can get reclaimed or recycled materials, that'll probably be our mm-hmm. next point of call. There's always, you know, renovations or deconstructing happening around, so it's always great to keep an eye on, you know, bricks or you know, even hardwood timbers, et cetera, from demolition yeah. sites, et cetera. So we'll probably look at that first after that and then see what we can do locally. And a lot of the time you'll find at least some of those elements you will find. It's always sort of you've got to jump on them in the moment, but, you know, with the builder helping sometimes and the client, we can all sort of manage that. And, yeah, some of those you'll see a lot of those have some sort of recycled or reclaimed component in them. And then if the other materials maybe, you know, a bit more raw, or we look at maybe a long-term lifespan, a little bit longer lifespan. You know, I feel like today, even with things, it's just a throwaway world, plastics and, you know, everything we use, packaging, how we're trying to move well away from that. And it's similar in the construction industry, there's a lot of materials to decipher through to find good quality materials to, you know, double the lifespan or continue to the lifespan that you would expect
yeah.
building.
Yeah.
Which obviously increases, decreases, you know, obviously the you know, changing over of materials mid-span or mid-life or, you know, 10 years, 20 years time, you know, that's not yeah. acceptable. We've got to really move forward to that. We've got to have materials that, you know, like hardwood that used to stand up sheds, buildings, houses, you know, through the years, still standing the reasons, you know, good quality, solid timber lasts or even steel. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the approach we have with the materials. And then obviously clients will have great input as well. And we kind of have that good conversation and try and keep on track with that because, yeah, it's a bit of a minefield.
Yeah. I'd like to ask architects what tips they've got for clients particularly, but also other people in the industry. If you're just starting out on a project and you're looking to incorporate some of those concepts that you've talked about, like the biophilia or whether it's going down a more energy efficient route towards passive house, what are some top tips that you'd give people?
Probably, I guess, some really basic ones is the aggressive insulation. Obviously, really raise the bar with your thermal comfort and your envelope. Aggressive insulation all around, floor, wall, ceiling. It's, you know, obviously with passive house, the more airtight, you need to be airtight. but in a solar passive, just aggressive insulation also can help with appropriate ventilation systems. Water, obviously water is a big one. What rainwater harvesting we use a lot, and obviously it's a big component of our off-grid rural projects where it's always
helpful. Is that a requirement for a lot of people, or is it just advisable?
I think it's a requirement. If when we're off-grid, yes, it'll be how much do we need, you know,
sure.
what's suitable for our family or sometimes it's for, you know, a possible future owner, you know, what's, I guess, commensurate with the project size. So that's often a question, and we can never have too much, and obviously the most we can harvest, the better we'll be in those drought periods of time. So that's a big one. And obviously wastewater, I'm talking still on the rural off-grid sort of scenarios where we've got recycling of black and grey water systems.
Do those aspects of self-resilience lead into or trickle down into the more urban areas as well, or do people in the town just kind of rely on the town supplies and town infrastructure and not really worry too much about being independent?
No, it's actually been positive. The council's initiative's been great. I mean, they're requiring, and they have for some time, requiring a minimum storage capacity for each site, which is great. It can be used in a number of ways, obviously through their gardens, or even we encourage to reuse internally your toilets or cold water taps in, say, we need for our minimum energy requirements. So it's great because people appreciate it. Maybe it's just where we are, our environment or our geographical location. You know, water's a big thing. You know, Goulburn once went out of water almost back in the 90s. So we don't take it for granted here. We really appreciate it and always talk about it. What can we do? So I think maybe that's just born into the everyday project for us.
Yeah, I mean, because I grew up in Adelaide and I've seen that over the last couple of decades when I've gone back to South Australia, I've seen more and more awareness. And my parents, we always had rainwater, but we were kind of, we were in a metropolitan area. We were abnormal in a way, but now it's just so common. And the other thing that I've noticed is that if you go back, when I go back home in summertime, most lawns will be brown. You know, it's become a lot more acceptable to have a more native garden, or certainly not the English country garden that's got to be kept green all through summer. Yeah. It seems that there's a maturity of the Australian vernacular that's happening a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. I think maybe, we can accept, the good times when watering's easy, and then obviously the other times when it's difficult. And I think, species and drought-proof landscapes are difficult, but achievable, of course. And I think we are, I guess, a bit more accepting of the times, which I guess is again that relationship back with our climate a little bit, isn't it? It's we do appreciate that a lot more when things are good. Yeah.
And what's your fire risk, your bushfire risk like out that way?
Look, we've got a lot of bushfire prone areas. Yeah, we're in a quite a big area that's almost here to Sydney, has good patches of large areas of bushfire prone land. So yeah, we deal with that every day. We've got different levels, great consultants that help in our team, and it's a challenge. Yeah, some of them, quite considerably, because it's a big decision on how, buffer zones and how much water storage we have also set aside for that, and what we do for that. So everyone's very conscious, and obviously we had a really bad time in the coastal areas, probably a couple of hours from us, right to the fringe, as you know. Over the New Year period, so it's certainly hot on the agenda, as it always has been. But
yeah,
it's an integral process and careful consideration every time. Yeah.
Where's the extent of your clientele? Do you generally stick to the local area?
Yeah, we work probably just, I guess, if you were to, probably sit between Sydney and Canberra would be fair, and as far east as the coast, east coast, and then we go inland as well to sort of regional areas as well. So, yeah, I'd say between most of our projects have been 90-95% have been between Sydney and Canberra. And as west as Orange and places like that, parks.
So
we enjoy that. And I guess we're dealing with a lot of rural clients and city-based clients as well, Sydney and Canberra clients. So it's quite a big diversity of people.
Nice mixture.
Yeah.
And you can see that in the work that you've done. Is some pretty modern stuff there as well, and some beautiful, I like the barn style house as well, with it definitely in a country setting. So it's must be a nice, keep you interested with a bit of mixture there.
Yeah, definitely. It's great. I mean, the clients are fantastic, and a lot of those aren't on big budgets either, so that's always, it doesn't have to be a big budget house. It's certainly not large houses, but they've got a lot of bit of detail, and the clients have been very excited to, along the way. So yeah, it's very different. It's never two the same. Jigsaw puzzle. Another jigsaw puzzle comes along. So it's always fun. And I guess I'm passionate about it. So, and that's all I really know. So it's good. It's good fun.
Cool. Yeah. Hey, well, thank you for your time, Simon. It's great to connect, and that's exciting that you've got a couple of passive house projects on the go. So hopefully that will continue and keep spreading the word about that as an option for that climate and for that region.
Yeah, thanks, Matthew. Appreciate you having me on.
Simon Croker there. He's the founder of SC Design Solutions, a little practice in a little town, but doing significant things. What significant things are you up to? And what are you doing to improve the way buildings are designed, created, put together, wherever you are? I really like the story of Simon's discovery of Passive House, having looked at passive solar being influenced by people in that field. And now he's got a couple of passive house projects on the go, and hoping to have some, as he described it from his younger years, have those buildings emerge from the ground. I really like that idea as well, of buildings emerging out of the ground and being part of the ground and being at one with the place where they are, respectful of the place that they are in. The other thing I really like about the conversation there with Simon was that balance of connection with the environment and closing off from the environment, because part of what we do with buildings, part of their purpose is to be an enclosure, which by definition is a barrier between us and the outside. But as part of biophilia and as part of just our desire to be in nature, we want to have views. We want to be able to have indoor-outdoor flow, as we call it. We want to be able to easily connect with that environment, but we want to connect it with it in an appropriate way, and that is the power of good design, is to have that connection when we want it, but also to be closed from the things that aren't going to be healthy and comfortable if we are experiencing them regularly. Love to get your thoughts on this episode and others. You can always contact me, Matthew@HomestyleGreen. And if you'd like to help support the show, then head over to homestylegreen.com and you can click the Patreon button. Just helps with any of the running costs of keeping the site up and running and making this information freely available to you, the listener. Thank you very much for tuning in. Now go make a better place to live.